Oh, yes. Nothing gets me more excited than seeing a canceled meeting invite. Oh, my God. Today's looking a lot better.
Then let's do a show. Let's kick it off. Ready? Pretty much sums up my feelings about music. I love you, I hate you, I'm on the fence about you, all that stuff. Great music, some not so great music in 2015. This is our year in music, 2015. I am here with Stephen Thompson, Robin Hilton, and in Nashville, Tennessee, Ann Powers. We're listening to Courtney Barnett. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hey,
Bob.
Y'all.
Hey, Bob.
This is from, of course, Courtney Barnett. Sometimes I just sit and think, and sometimes I just sit.
It's close to the right title.
What did I get? What did I get wrong?
You had an extra just.
Damn, I do that all the time.
Yeah, well, you're a monster.
I know,
but that,
right?
That title speaks perfectly to the themes in this record. It's just all about these little mundane observations in life. And but my favorite line in one of her songs from this record is, I want to go out, but I want to stay in.
Yeah.
That summed up my life. I want to go out, but I want to stay in.
The Robin Hilton story.
This was actually a debut album, it's hard to believe, from Courtney Barnett, because the album that came out previous was just an issue of two EPs she had done back in 2013 or so. And I don't know about you, but I know... Actually, I bet we'll all have a different list. I bet the top of our list will be a different record. This will be, for sure, my favorite record of 2015. It's a song, this song, Pedestrian at Best, the one we're playing right now. She wrote at the very last minute. She basically sang this song for the very first time in the recording session. She wrote songs over the course of the year, but held them back from the band in order to keep it fresh when in the studio. And I think you get all of that when you hear this record, right?
I love the way this album, like, and her career in general, she started out as this rambler, right? You know, she's somebody who would just write these seemingly stream of consciousness, but kind of ambling stuff. And then this record came out, and this song in particular, I love this record, but this song that we're playing is my song of the year, for sure.
Wow. We actually agree.
It just, well, I've got a different favorite album, but... this record, like, brings out, it's just this coming out party of her as a rock star, which I really wasn't expecting.
Here I am interrupting Stephen, and it's only the first go round. We're setting the mood, but I just wanted to say that having seen her live this year was a revelation. She played the NPR Music Showcase at South by Southwest, and
premiering most of these songs too.
And it was like, to me, this is perhaps a specious comparison, but it felt like Nirvana, you know, the heaviness, the intensity. Live, they bring it so hard.
Well, this song in particular is very Nirvana. I don't think it's specious at all. I think it's just accurate. But I love Nirvana.
Let's hear just a tiny bit as we come to its end. So what are we going to do here on this show? We're not just going to play Courtney Barnett. We're walking through the year. We'll do it sort of chronologically, right? And we'll pick out highlights from the year. This is by no means every great record.
This is the only list you need.
That's right. This show is going to be 19 hours long. Apologies in advance.
NPR Music's coverage begins on Monday. Begins here, but begins with lists on Monday. Album lists will be out, and then a week after that, song lists. We'll each, Stephen Thompson, Robin Hilton, Ann Powers, and I will all have our top 10 lists. I'm really actually curious to see all of those, because I think they're going to be very different. It's a year where there is so much music, and we have all very different tastes in music. But let's talk. This Pedestrian at Best came out in February, top of the year. What else came out at the top of the year? Ann Powers, you had a fave.
as we all know, there's been this trend recently of artists dropping surprise albums. We had two from Drake this year. Drake and Future did one. Drake did his own. There was a Wilco surprise album. One of my favorites was Thunder Bitch. Brittany Howard from Alabama Shakes, her side project. But the very first and most exciting in many ways came from Björk. Wonderful Björk, one of the greatest art, music, dance, pop, uncategorizable geniuses of our time. She released a record called Vulnicura. It was the story of her breakup with her partner of many years, Matthew Barney, the artist Matthew Barney. And it is just this raw, intense, confessional music, but also, because it's Björk, it's musically experimental, it's highly orchestrated, and just a deep plunge into a black lake and you surface on the other side. A gorgeous record, a surprising record, a deep record that just keeps on giving. So we're going to hear a song from that record called Mouth Mantra.
Björk worked hard on those string arrangements. They're quite beautiful. It's sort of, I think she said, what she could do best in such troubled and times where her mind was just reeling and trying to understand a relationship that had come to an end.
And absolutely. And in fact, she's just released a new version of this record called Vulnicura Strings, which is acoustic versions. I think that is indicative of art this time and this year. Artists put stuff out there for us, but then they reclaim it, they remake it. The album is a fluid form, you know what I mean? And we're going to see artists building on their work over years in new ways because of the way music's distributed now, which I think is a wonderful thing.
I wonder if anyone has the time. I mean, the artists have the time and they have the tools, but we are not the norm because we get enormous amounts of music, but In some ways, everybody has enormous amounts of music, and I begin to think about that.
You mean like if one record exists in multiple different forms, do people have time to appreciate all of
that? That's right.
I mean, even the first version of this record, I mean, you don't get a Björk record and listen to it and then feel like you've heard it, right?
Like, yeah, it's deep enough.
I have had to spend time kind of going back to this record, like, how do I feel about it? It's not a completely linear experiencing a Björk record to begin with. So when they start to spin off different forms, they become that much harder to latch onto.
That's the richness for me.
Right. No, I mean, that's not even a criticism. That's not saying like, well, boo, down with Björk.
I don't even think it's an issue of all the different the various forms that a single record may take when it's released. For me, it's just the sheer volume, the mass amount of music that came out. The quantity, and I don't know if it's just because we listen to more, we get more that we need to listen to, but I just felt this year more than any other, like I couldn't keep up with all the great music.
You also had a baby.
Well, that's true. That's true too. But, you know, like, if you ask me what was my favorite record this year, I'd say the Sufjan Stevens record by far. And I feel like I listened to that record a million times. And I went in my iTunes and looked at the play count 18 times.
Wow.
18 times I listened to that record. Yeah. And
I threw out a poll yesterday that just asked people, okay, so favorite album, how many times you listened to it? And 50% of the people listened to their very favorite album of the year less than 20 times.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that means they could go 2 weeks without hearing the record, if, you know, depending, of course, when it came out. But it surprised me. I mean,
there was no time for, I really felt like, to dig deep into a record.
And I wonder
and
what
just
that means to an artist as deep as Björk make music as deep as that.
Yeah. That's...
I have an opinion about that. Maybe certain albums are becoming more like films. You don't. I mean, people who love film might see films over and over again, but others see a film once or possibly twice. And maybe we devote the time, or maybe this is a good listening practice to consider. Take a record like this one. When you're listening to it, treat it like a film. Truly immerse. Don't do the dishes. Don't be on your phone playing Minecraft or whatever the kids play these days.
Mind candy, crush craft.
Stop with your Pac-Man and your Donkey Kong.
Just listen to the music, people.
But I think that is a really interesting point. Like, think about your favorite movie of all time. How many times have you seen it?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it.
Except for Velvet Goldmine, I watch over and over again because of the scenes where Ewan McGregor and Christian Bale. Never mind. Anyway.
But I'm not even sure my favorite movie is the one I've seen the most. Is another thing. Like a movie like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, I've only seen a few times, but it's constantly spinning in my memory.
So true. Unlike Mean Girls, which I've seen 3,000 exactly, million times exactly. Because my 12-year-old is obsessed with it.
Right, I've seen Pee-wee's Big Adventure way more often than I've seen.
A classic.
So, Robin Hilton, what did you listen to top of the year?
The Slater-Kinney record. You know, this was a year that we saw a lot of great returns. Some not so great returns, but this was one of the great ones, and I think one of the most anticipated returns. The band got back together after a 10-year break. Corin Tucker, Carrie Brownstein, and Janet Weiss. They all got involved in other projects during that 10-year window, but Carrie Brownstein said in an interview we did with her that getting the band back together felt like coming home for everybody.
Well, just think how much slumming Carrie Brownstein had done during that time.
Oh,
off.
I know.
What kind of losers she was hanging out with.
Portlandia?
Well, yeah. in our dumb show.
Yeah, that's true. She was on our dumb show. But I think the overall, you never know what's going to happen. I'm always holding my breath a little when I know one of my favorite bands is coming back after a long break, and I'm thinking, please be a good record. Please let me love this record. And I think the overall consensus with this one, their record No Cities to Love, was that they pulled it off and pulled it off pretty brilliantly. No Cities to Love is the name of the album, and the song I want to play is the opening cut, Price Tag.
The system fix.
think they put together their most accessible record that they've ever done. It's confident, furious, aggressive, super tight record. It's 10 tracks. It's barely a half hour long.
And it's a note to all bands who want to pull back their get back together and make music, which is do it when it's right. And they did, and it really felt good. The live show was brilliant.
Yeah. Well, and Carrie told us, when we talked with her about her, I think, brilliant biography that she did, Hunger Makes Me the Modern Girl, Makes Me a Modern Girl. She said that as long as the band feels like it has something to say and there's urgency there, they'll keep making music. So hopefully this isn't the last we'll hear from them.
Yeah, she's one who doesn't, if she's not feeling it, she won't do it.
Which is why she quit our show.
Right. But I mean, she is not somebody who is going to do something because she feels obligated to do it. She's going to do it when she feels it. That's why there was only one Wild Flag record, you know?
Yeah.
What Bob said about the show being great, one thing I love about it when bands like this get back together is observing younger fans who have never had the chance to see them have that chance. Mm-hmm. That is just, and so many young people, especially young women I know, were just freaking that they got to see Slater Kinney this year. It's
you could have
fantastic.
Been in elementary school when the band broke up and in college when they got back together.
Yes, exactly.
So it's completely different.
That was my experience.
Right.
I was in elementary school when they broke up.
And they bring so much history to their shows that it really is a beautiful thing, because they bring something like the Gang of Four to that guitar sound, and you hear that these days. There's a group called Shopping that is a new band, and you hear that kind of sound. And it's nice to just keep that thread of history, that living language that music is alive. And I think Slater Kinney does that well.
Amen.
Amen indeed. One of the records I think that's going to wind up more than any other record at the top also came out at the top of the year, and that's Kendrick Lamar record.
Yeah, I feel like this is the consensus. I mean, if you were to name one album of the year, this is kind of the album of the year, right? I mean, I think it is the most critically acclaimed record of the year, but it's also the one that I personally have had to just go back and keep unpacking throughout the entire year. And every time I listen to it, I'm encountering something else. I'm encountering something else that frustrates me, something else that thrills me, something else that makes me try to puzzle it out. And it's an enormously long record. It's basically like an 80-minute record. And it has just all these ideas woven into it that he keeps coming back to. And the music is thrilling. The album is called To Pimp a Butterfly. I haven't even bothered even mentioning that. Even picking out a song from this record is tricky, because for something that is so huge and kind of unwieldy, there's no sense in trying to pare it down.
There's spoken word, there's jazz, there's all sorts of stuff on this record, but pick one.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick it just because it's the most like rousing, stompy, car windows down. Even it is a frustrating song, though. I'm gonna pick the song King Kunta. I got a bone to pick. I don't want you monkey mouth motherfucker sitting in my throne again.
I'm mad, but I ain't stressing. True friends, one question. Bitch, where you and I was walking? Now I run a game, got the whole world talking. King Kunta, everybody wanna cut the legs off him. Kunta, black man taking no losses. Oh, yeah. Bitch, where you and I was walking? Now I run the game, got the whole world talking. King Kunta, everybody wanna cut the legs off him. Well, you got the yams. What's the yams? The yam is the power that be. You can smell it when I'm walking down the street. Oh, yes, we can. Oh, yes, we can. I can dig rapping. But a rapper with a ghost rider. What the fuck happened? Oh, no. I swore I wouldn't tell. But most of y'all share bars like you got to buy the bunk in a two-man sale. A two-man sale. Something's in the water. Something's in the water. And if I got a brown nose for some gold, then I'd rather be a bum than a motherfucking ball. Oh, yeah. Bitch, where you and I was walking. Now I run the game, got the whole world talking. King Kunta, everybody wanna cut the legs off him. King Kunta, black man taking no losses. Oh, yeah. Bitch, where you and I was walking. Now I run the game, got the whole world talking. King Kunta, everybody wanna cut the legs off him. King Kunta, you got the yams.
The yam brought it out of Richard Pryor. I'll tell you what the yams are.
Yeah, I mean, Kendrick Lamar, he's effective on so many levels. He's poetic. He's extremely interior. This album is really a dialogue with himself and with American history, hip-hop history, Tupac Shakur. This song, King Kunta, referencing Kunta Kinte from Alex Haley's Roots, one of the most famous accounts of slavery. It's just this. It's so corny to say. Sometimes I want to say things like, "This album is America," but this album does feel like America in 2015.
Well, there's so much going on even within that one song. Like you said, you're bringing in all these references to roots and to slavery, but it's within this unbelievably springy, vibrant sound that's so fun on top of it. So
that bass line, just slays me, the bass line in that song.
So the fact that this record is as thoughtful as it is and as serious as it is, while still having moments of levity bordering on silliness, it's just an album I can't stop listening to, and B, can't stop thinking about.
And his dexterity is amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of silly to compare musicians to athletes, but when I think of Kendrick Lamar as a rapper, I think of Steph Curry as a basketball player, and you are just like dazzled every time the man is in front of you. That's how I feel about Kendrick. And it's a great year to watch incredibly graceful people and listen to incredibly graceful voices like this one.
Well, I mean, it's an album. It's a complete album. And we talk all the time, like, are albums still relevant? Is everything just songs now? And this is an album.
Truth.
We're talking the year in music, 2015, mainly wrapped around the first quarter. I think we ought to move it along.
Let's get into April.
I mean,
we could have stayed in February and March forever.
I was going to say, this was a pretty front-loaded year.
It really was. Another record that was full of great lyricism was the Sufjan Stevens record, where Kendrick Lamar was sort of an interior monologue with himself. I think Sufjan did the same thing with his childhood, trying to understand his emotions with his mom. The record's called Carrie and Lowell. And he used music as his way of trying to get to the heart of abandonment and all sorts of stuff. Robin Hilton, you'd love
This record came out in the first quarter. I thought I'd talk about it for the second quarter because that's when I saw his life-changing live performance of this record. But we've talked a lot about it throughout the year. But yeah, it's a story we now know. His mom, Sufjan's mom, left him when he was a small child. She was schizophrenic and abused alcohol and drugs, and he would see her on the summers for a few years, but then didn't see her at all for many, many years until she got cancer. They reunited, and he was with her by her side when she died. And like Bob said, this record is Sufjan just opens up. It's sometimes painful to listen to just because it's so heartbreaking. But the thing that I took away from the record more than anything else is his message of love for everybody. Mm-hmm. He just absolute openness and love. He gets put through the ringer on this record, trying to make sense of everything that's happened to him, but concludes, I'm not going to be bitter, I'm going to have love.
Right, and that his mom did the right thing.
Right, thank you for leaving us, because
it could have been really
much
worse.
Yeah, it would have been awful. He talks about a lot of characters on this record, but one I've never quite figured out is a character called John, and that's what I want to... I'm not sure who John is in this story, but he has this beautiful song called John, My Beloved, that I want to play.
The fossils I find. So can we pretend sweetly before the mystery ends? I am a man with a heart that offends with its lonely and greedy demands. There's only a shadow of me in a matter of speaking. I'm dead. Such a waste, your beautiful face, stumbling carpet arise. Go follow your gem.
Sufjan, I apologize for fading you down here.
Just the guy
in
has
manner speaking, he's faded out already.
Yeah, this guy has just a genius sense for melody. Sun Lux, the artist Sun Lux, has worked with Sufjan Stevens on a number of projects, and I asked Sun Lux one time what it was like working with him, and he said he's never met or worked with anyone who understood melody as intuitively as Sufjan Stevens does, and what a beautiful voice, too.
Yes.
But I should mention his live show because that's why I noted him in the second quarter. So I remember back in 94, I saw Pink Floyd on their tour, and I couldn't stop talking about the show, right? And I remember about a month later, I was driving around with a friend of mine, and I was still talking about the show. And I could kind of tell by the look
for
on
the
her,
entire month.
Yeah, I could tell by the look on her face that she wasn't really into what I was talking about. And I said, I'm sorry, am I boring you? And she said, well, surely something else has happened in your life in the past month that you can talk about. Which brings me to Sufjan. I say, no show has come close to that in 20 years, and Sufjan wiped it off the map.
Cut to 2034. We're riding in the car.
I saw Sufjan Stevens in 2015. But his show didn't just... I don't say this lightly. His show did not just blow me away. It literally changed me. I left that show feeling better about humanity and the state of the world.
It's interesting because your behavior hasn't changed at all.
That's right. I still despise you, Johnson.
I totally understand, though, because I saw him at the Ryman here in Nashville recently, and although my life was already pretty good before that show, you know, it, unlike yours, Robin, because you had nothing to change. I do think, I mean, the thing that is brilliant about him performing this material live is that it's not that spontaneous. Like, it's very structured. The arrangements are very structured. The band moves in a certain way. He shows home movies behind him while he's playing, and the lights are very intense. It's almost like a classical performance, but that just enriches every song and really immerses you in the music in this very deep way. I completely agree.
Yeah, he wants people to have a very specific experience at that show. And
a religious experience, I think, in some ways.
It was for
me. Speaking of which, Robin, John, my beloved, is a reference to the gospel. John was the most beloved disciple of Jesus. And we know that Sufjan is extremely interested in Christianity, and often uses references to Christianity. So I think that's not purely the meaning he's talking about, but that's definitely an echo in the song.
Interesting, and he also has on the stage one of the things behind him are these, I could only call them church windows, the way they're shaped.
Yes.
Yeah. And you see all the home movies of his childhood playing behind those windows.
I love this record so much.
Yeah, me too.
It's hard to talk about this record. Because you're just talking, about raw emotions. When
there's a line in one of these songs that I read the line to my wife. She hadn't even heard the song. I just read the line and she burst into tears.
Whoa!
I bet I know what it is. When I was three, maybe four, she left us in the video store.
That's a good one too. The line was from the 4th of July. Did you get enough love, my little dove? Why do you cry? I'm sorry I left, but it was for the best, though it never felt right.
All those nicknames
the little nicknames for each other. And it's his mother speaking to him from the grave, you know, saying, I'm sorry I left you, but please tell me that I just want to know that everything worked out for you.
I'm still trying to picture your wife crying. Your wife's nickname is Crusher.
It is. Crusher has a soft side.
Even Crushers cry, Stephen.
Even Crushers cry, yes.
So many of these records, the Courtney record, the Kendrick record, the Bjork record, Sufjan's record, lyrics.
Yeah.
Almost more than anything are, I think, what we'll remember these records by.
And you were saying, like, everybody, you know, like, oh, our top 10 lists are going to be incredibly different. We all love most of these records, right? I mean, there is some consensus around these records.
Yeah.
Well, I think our top 10 list will be different because we love these records and so many other more records. It was just such a rich year. And I know that there is an overwhelming amount of music, but 2015 in particular, just so many artists were at a turning point, I think, in their own lives and careers that we had this confluence of great music from all angles, all corners of popular music.
I'm going to pick a band that may be the youngest in of the things we play, a group called Girlpool.
Oh, yeah.
Two teens from Los Angeles moved to Philly and made a record. It's probably the simplest sorts of music out there in terms of it's just two players, bass and guitar. Like the Sufjan record, there are no drums, which I thought was made their sound stand out and made the words stand out more. And I'm going to play a song from their record, Before the World Was Big. I'm going to play a song called Crowded Stranger.
You are a city bus driving on the wrong.
Cleo Tucker on guitar and vocals, and Harmony Tividad, and she plays the bass. Vulnerable, I think, is one way to describe what they do.
Bare Bones is another one.
Yeah.
I love the way that their music is jagged and beautiful at the same time. Mm-hmm. This is I remember Carrie Brownstein describing some record or other as it has teeth. Mm-hmm. And this record has teeth. And at the same time, there is this, I mean, the title song from that record I've listened to probably 75 times this year.
Clearly before, we know why Stephen doesn't have time to listen to other records.
The songs are the same record over and over again.
The
songs are short.
Yeah, they only get to about 2 minutes. I'm not sure what the album clocks in at, but it's
short.
Under
30. It's like 22, 23 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
One interesting thing about Girlpool, I think, is that they represent a new generation inspired by Riot Girl, inspired by bands like Sleater-Kinney. In fact, Harmony from Girlpool studied with my old friend Evelyn McDonnell, where she teaches at Loyola in Los Angeles. Evelyn, of course, being a longtime feminist music writer. So we're seeing this new vanguard, I think, of feminist politics and just feminist-inspired music that is very exciting to me. It's a great ongoing thread in music, I think.
And there was other bands, Eskimo, Pretty It's, Florist, all groups that do that very simple lyric writing. And they joined in Philadelphia. There's such a scene in Philadelphia. There's such an amazing string of bands there, Beach Slang and Radiator Hospital, Strand of Oaks and Cayetano, Waxahachie, Hop Along, so many. Casey Musgraves put out a record this year, Pageant Material, that I know you were in love with, Stephen Thompson. And again, lyrics
Yeah, her lyrics are so sharp, and Anne and I have been lovingly squabbling about country records for the last few weeks, and I love this record.
I love Casey, though. I love you, Casey.
But, you know, we also were talking about, I mean, this was a really good year for country music. You and I both love the Ashley Monroe record, both love the Chris Stapleton record. There's, you know, good Dwight Yoakam record. You know, we were just going back and forth on all these different records. And for me, this Casey Musgraves record, while not quite as emotionally rich as her first record, which was my favorite album of whatever year that was, I just came back to this record again and again for these incredibly charming, beautiful, very melodically sound little mission statements. You know, she's all about telling people to mind their nosy beeswax in song after song, while still kind of, you know, establishing this very distinct identity. She has such a strong identity, not only as a songwriter, but as a performer and as just like a figure in country music. I saw her live at the Lincoln Theater here in DC, and just found her show so wonderfully charming. And I was kind of sitting in the balcony watching the crowd react to her and kind of singing along to every song, whether they're songs that registered with me or not. I love her, and I love this record. She did a wonderful Tiny Desk concert for us. For me, she was somebody, this record was a comfort food record for me. The album is Pageant Material, and probably my favorite song on the record is a track called Dime Store Cowgirl. The songwriting on this record is, I don't know, I love her so much.
Well, not to just be in the Anne lane, as always, but I will say that when I saw her play here in Nashville at the Ryman, it was young women who were just going crazy. Yeah. I mean, definitely
here
Casey,
too.
Like Ashley Monroe, like Maddie and Tay, who made a great record this
That's
year,
a good
too.
Record too.
Like Cam, there's so many great young country, female country artists, but that audience of young women who, some say, have been ignored by the trend toward bro country, are really getting served by people like Casey, and I think that's great.
Well, Stephen's a young woman at heart.
At heart.
Absolutely. I mean,
he's got the hair.
Under that hat.
Listening to country radio, though, it's so frustrating how rarely you hear those great records.
It's going to get better. Trust me. I know it. I know this year's going to be
you're
the
a believer.
Year.
You're
women
an
on
optimist.
Country radio. I'm feeling it.
An artist that sort of had a more countryish flavor than the record she put out now, Torres. I would not say she's flat out a country artist, but certainly had much more folky roots than this record, Sprinter, a giant surprise.
Yeah.
Yes. This is a record. I mean, the Rhiannon Giddens record, Tomorrow Is My Turn, is to me the most genius record of the year in many ways. But as far as a record that affected me personally most deeply, Torres's Sprinter is it. I want to tell you a little story. So I got this record.
Let me take my shoes off. Hang on.
I'm gonna tell you a story.
Get a drink. Get a sweet tea. I was in Athens, Georgia. I was driving across Georgia back from Athens, back home, and it was pitch dark. I'm on the interstate, and I put on this album for the first time, and I became so enraptured. I went through every emotion. the lyrics seem to be speaking directly to me about my own life, my own experience, so much so that I drove completely the wrong way and took 45 more minutes to get home than I should. Thanks, Mackenzie Scott.
But
anyway,
Mackenzie
Scott, she is from the South. She's originally from Georgia, went to Belmont University here in Nashville, Tennessee, now lives in Brooklyn. And yeah, she worked with Rob Ellis, who has often worked with PJ Harvey on this record, and it has let's just say it's redolent of PJ Harvey's work. But I mean, the sound, the dynamics are so intense. She also is just delivering live this monster show. Her voice is so alluring, and you know, there's just many colors to her voice. But it is the lyrics again, talking about the experience of having and losing faith, the experience of being adopted and dealing with that, the experience of loving and losing. All of it is in here, loving and losing loved ones. It's really just a life's work, and she's not even 25 years old. Yeah. Incredible to me. And we're going to hear the title track from Torres's incredible album, Sprinter.
Severed tree, I picked it up and took a swing. My pastor told us, don't you worry, even Zacchaeus found his glory. I was a sprinter.
Everything that was awesome about the 90s in this song.
Yeah.
I love this record so much.
Gives me chills.
And you know, when I saw her live earlier this year, at the end of that show, I thought, she's going to be huge.
Yeah.
She's going to be really huge someday. I hope it happens for her, because she was such a force to witness.
She's growing and growing. And you know, Robin, in relationship to the Sufjan record, this is another young artist, and actually Kendrick Lamar, dealing with their relationship to religion and spirituality and trying to work that out. And I think at a moment in our country and in our world when religion can be so dividing, to have these artists really grappling with the need for spirituality, the need for some aspect of that in their lives, and yet the limitations of certain forms of religion, it's very deep and so important that these albums are coming out.
We are going to hop into the third quarter. This would be your chance.
Sprint.
Sprinting.
Right. Your chance to take your break, get a drink, cozy up. We're going to put up a poll that's going to ask you about your favorite records of 2015 and give you a chance to do that. So look for that poll online. We'll ask you, what, for five favorite records of the year?
Yeah, what were your top five records?
Yeah, and we'll do a show based on that as well. NPR Music Coverage favorite 50 albums starts on Monday, and the following week we'll do favorite songs. There'll be hundreds of them. The discussions have been intense and fun, and there's such different tastes that run in this office. And
I feel like there's been less yelling this year, though.
Yeah, I think there has been.
We're starting to hone our system.
They locked the pop group in a room, and it's just a baseball bat on the table.
It was bloody.
We just spent most of the time just wrestling over it. We didn't even get to swing it.
There are lots of things. You mentioned a bit of this, Anne, at the top of the show, which were the Wave records came out this year. The Kendrick record, came out a week early by accident, I think. Right. And the Bjork record came out two months early for leaking. The Adele record has decided not to be a streamed record. At least that's true for now. The Wilco record, free, out of nowhere, without any expectation at all, brilliantly dropped in the middle of July. Again, this goes to quantity of music and maybe the changing nature of music, because there's so many different types of it. It didn't rise. I bet it won't be on most people's top 10 any given year. This record is an excellent record.
It'll be on my top 10.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, I think there are a number of really beloved, established bands put out records this year, like Death Cab for Cutie and The Decemberists. And in any given year...
My Morning Jacket,
exactly. Any given year, those records would have been huge cause for celebration. And it's like people barely even noticed this year.
All of the artists you mentioned were artists that were bigger in the past decade than this. Mm-hmm. We talked last year about the idea of can a band that's in their middle or later years have impact. They certainly have impact to those who are fans of them, but do they garner new fans? I don't know. I don't know that anybody became a fan of Wilco because of the Star Wars record.
I think a lot of it boils down to a willingness to stretch or a reluctance to stretch, and I think that often determines whether those records really catch on. I mean, the Wilco record is a very inventive sounding record. Does it massively expand on this? I like the Wilco record, but you know, a few of the other bands we named didn't necessarily move beyond a fairly limited sound, and so they felt like just another record by so and so.
Well, I like to play something from this Wilco record because I think it was an extraordinarily good record. The record opens up with just some guitar crazy fuzz, but the ending song on the record was the one that captured my imagination. The song is called Magnetized.
Orchestrate the shell, pink refrigerator drum, carry it in the shadows, almost bone. That I keep of you next to me.
I think this is as good as Wilco's best.
I'm just going to turn mics off and on.
It, 10 years from now, I'll still be reaching for this record. I think this record, Star Wars, and I think the Tweedy record last year, I think Jeff Tweedy's doing some of the best songwriting of his life right now.
And there's so much growth when you think about it. I was thinking about what to play next, and one of them, the things I was thinking about was maybe play Jason Isbell. Both in their lives, I mean, Jason Isbell is sort of the king of Americana music, and at some point in his life, Jeff Tweedy might well have been considered that. And the growth of that artist over these years has just been wonderful to watch and hear.
Well, definitely. I mean, Jason Isbell is at the top of his form right now. Of course, his album this year, Something More Than Free, following up an absolute breakthrough of a solo album, Southeastern. This new album, Something More Than Free, not only is a triumph artistically, really such a profound, beautifully crafted set of songs about Southern life, about family life, about personal changes, but also it was a major commercial accomplishment. Jason topped the rock, Americana, and country charts all at the same time with this album. And alongside another great seasoned artist to have a breakthrough this year, Chris Stapleton, who swept the CMA Awards and rose to the top of the Billboard charts a little later in the year, Jason is representing a new moment in which what is called Americana, what is called country, are all coming together again. And I was just talking to Jason's producer, Dave Cobb, yesterday about how there is now a window open for this kind of music, even possibly entering into the mainstream of country. I went to Jason's show at the Ryman. I live at the Ryman, by the way. I don't actually have an address. But and that audience, too, oh my gosh, it was just the adulation is so intense for him. So we are going to hear a song, I think, that captures the triumphal nature of Jason Isbell's music right now. It's called Flagship. Very romantic song. You'll hear Amanda Shires, his wife. They just had a baby. But anyway, it's a beautiful song. Beautiful love song.
There's a few too many years on this hotel. She used to be a beauty, you can tell. And the lights down in the lobby, they don't shine. They just flicker while the elevator winds. And the couple in the corner of the bar have traveled light and clearly traveled far. He's got nothing left to learn about his heart. And they're sitting there a thousand miles apart. Baby, let's not ever get that way. I'll say whatever words I need to say. I'll throw rocks at your window from the street. We'll call ourselves the flagship of the fleet. There's a lady shining shoes up by the door, and cowboy boots for $7 more. And I remember how you loved to see them shine, so I run upstairs and get a pair of mine. And there's a painting on the wall beside the bed, the watercolor sky at Hilton Head. And I see you in that summer when we met, and that boy you left in tears in his Corvette. Baby, let's not ever get there.
I have a question for you, Ann, because all the artists who we're playing today, I think Jason's the one I connect with the absolute least. And so for you, to a non-fan like myself, and I appreciate what he does, but I was at the Americana Music Awards, and I see that love and that adulation, and I go to his live shows, it just doesn't do it. So I'm trying to figure out what do you think it is that people connect with him that makes him rise to the top like he has?
I think with Jason Isbell, there's a combination of incredible craft and deep sincerity coming out of a life story that is particularly Southern, but also universal in that he really focuses on those essential life passages that people go through. Of course, Jason himself, his career started in the drive-by truckers, and he was a wild kid writing great songs from the beginning, but a big drinker, kind of out of control. A few years ago, he went through recovery, met his wife, Amanda Shires, who's also a violinist and a vocalist. And his personal story of becoming a master of what he does through this personal struggle and triumph, I think that really inspires his audience. Huh. I mean, actually, he made a reference to recovery when I saw him live, and the whole theater cheered. So people are really rooting for him. But I also think it is that attention to detail in his lyrics and the voice. I mean, if you're not into that kind of voice, a beautiful tenor that has a very Alabama twang. Maybe he doesn't speak to you, but as someone who's lived in the South now, getting on more than 5 years, six, almost 7 years, I don't know, the Southern voice for me is, it just speaks history, it speaks so many things, and I think that's a lot of what makes Jason Isbell so popular.
Sweet. Someone else from the South these days, from Kentucky, an album that I did fall in love with quite a bit, and if Stephen Thompson hadn't picked this, I would have. This is our Luke battle of last year, right, relived in the world of Joan Shelley.
Yeah, and I think Joan Shelley hits some of those same feel better, like calms some of the same nerves for me that LaLuke's record did last year. She put out this beautiful record this year with a guitarist that we really like named Nathan Salzberg, who did a lovely Tiny Desk concert a few years ago. And the two of them pair up, and he has these beautiful guitar lines that run through this record. And her voice is just this instrument of absolute calm. This was a rare record. This is my favorite album of the year, and it, you know, kind of brought to my mind all these thoughts about like what makes something the best album of the year. And it's not that it's the best album of the year. I think you know sweeping ambition and incredible scope and musical inventiveness, you know, those are the kind of things you think of when you think of the best album of the year. For me, this was just my favorite album of the year. This was the record I listened to the most. It was one that I turned to when I, you know, I'm always kind of looking to calm down a little bit. And this was the album that did it for me. It's also, you know, when you're looking at the metrics of what makes a great record, I love every single song on this album.
Yeah, me too.
And that is really, really rare. And in a sense, you know, it speaks to a little bit of the narrowness of the sound. Like this is not necessarily a thematically massively ambitious
it's
record.
It's the opposite of Kendrick Lamar.
Right. And that's I was exactly going to say that like what part of what makes the Kendrick Lamar record so great is that it's willing to trip up. It's willing to try, you know, to make really, really bold statements. And this record, it's not attempting that. But what it does do, it does to me perfectly well for its duration. This record is so beautiful. And it's also a record, we happened to get a bunch of copies of this album in the office, and I just was passing them around to anybody I could find who I, you know, Tom Heisinger, our classical guy. I'm like, Tom, you will love this record. So, and he did. He loved this record.
Where was my copy of them?
My issue, Robin, is more about how I feel about you personally.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
So
that's fair.
I can make you a copy of it on cassette.
Cold.
Anyway, beautiful, beautiful album. It's called Over and Even, and this song is called Easy Now. the classics.
<Yeah.
laughs>
You can't diss me like that. play your song. All right, fine. We'll do it.
It's almost over. across the river. Sweet the sound and the scent familiar. Stuck around, go and hold them closer.
So you know how, like Bob and Robin and Anne, you're all parents. You know how, like, as a parent, you're worried, like, your kid's late coming home, and you're really, really anxious, and you're pacing around the house. And then your kid comes home, and all of a sudden you're just not worked up anymore. And like every bit of anxiety you were feeling is just solved. I think that's what her music does for me. It kind of just solves everything. It just makes me feel less anxious and less worried. It just slows the blood.
I could feel my shoulders dropping a little bit while listening to that.
The other night I went to see Glenn Hansard, and Richard Thompson was the opening act. Of the many encores Glenn did, Richard Thompson came out with Glenn and performed Who Knows Where the Time Goes, the Sandy Denny Fairport Convention song, of which Richard Thompson played. It's a song that I've listened to often Sundays for most of my adult life. It's a song that I put on. And Joan Shelley's songs have that lifelong quality to them.
Yeah.
I think they're classic. They're classic, classic songs on this record.
I feel like when I came to you with this record, I used that Sandy Denny comparison to try to get you to listen.
Well, in a way, I think she actually sings more like Linda Thompson. And Bob, I saw that Richard also did my very favorite of theirs, Dimming of the Day.
Oh, my
and
God.
I think that also connects to what Joan is up to. This sort of very calm way of singing, I'm hearing it from other young singers. There's an artist down here named Aaron Ray who sings very similarly. And one of my favorite early in the year Americana albums by Andrew Combs, he also has this style that really soothes anxiety. However, Stephen, I have to say, when my kid comes home, she immediately puts on All Time Low or some other pop punk band. So there is no calm in my house.
I think my kids are a little calmer than yours.
Screamo. That's her thing.
As fall just began, a record came out, a double record came out, that I think was one of the most popular things we did on our site. Right?
Yeah.
We're talking about Hamilton, and the record pulled off something that I think no one thought really could work.
Well, it was the year's biggest surprise and also the year's biggest surprise hit, because it's a musical. It's nearly 2 hours long. It's a hip-hop musical, a form that you wouldn't think normally lends itself to a musical, but it's also a period piece. It takes place in the 18th century, and it is about just about the driest, most boring subject you can think of, the history of America's financial system as pioneered by Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a duel and stuff.
Well, yeah, that's true. But it just works incredibly. And I think one of the things that works so well in it is that it's music that somehow people who really love hip hop managed to find, respect it and think that it was actually done very well. And people who don't normally listen to hip hop found themselves loving it. Just smart songwriting, great rhymes, powerful characters, all written and conceived by the playwright and composer Lin-Manuel Miranda. This song I want to play is called Cabinet Battle, number one. And I burst out laughing when the song first started playing. And then the deeper I got into the back and forth between the two characters in this song, the more amazing it gets. This is a debate between Thomas Jefferson and Hamilton over Hamilton's financial plans for the country. Cabinet Battle number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, You could have been anywhere in the world tonight, but you're here with us in New York City. Are you ready for a cabinet meeting, huh? The issue on the table: Secretary Hamilton's plan to assume state debt and establish a national bank. Secretary Jefferson, you have the floor, sir.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We fought for these ideals, we shouldn't settle for less. These are wise words, enterprising men quote them. Don't act surprised, you guys, cause I wrote them. Ow, but Hamilton forgets. His plan would have the government assume state debts. Now place your bets as to who that benefits. The very seat of government where Hamilton sits.
Not true.
Oh, if the shoe fits, wear it. If New York's in debt, why should Virginia bear it? Our debts are paid, I'm afraid. Don't tax the South, cause we got it made in the shade. In Virginia, we plant seeds in the ground. We create, you just wanna move our money around. This financial plan is an outrageous demand, and it's too many damn pages for any man to understand. Stand with me in the land of the free. Pray to God we never see Hamilton's candidacy. Look, when Britain taxed our tea, we got frisky. Imagine what gon' happen when you try to tax our whiskey.
Thank you, Secretary Jefferson. Secretary Hamilton, your response.
Thomas, that was a real nice declaration. Welcome to the present, we're running a real nation. Would you like to join us? Or staying mellow, doing whatever the hell it is you do in Monticello. If we assume the debts the union gets, a new line of credit, a financial diuretic, how do you not get it? If we're aggressive and competitive, the union gets a boost. You'd rather give it a sedative? A civics lesson from a slaver. Hey, neighbor, your debts are paid because you don't pay for labor. We plant seeds in the South, we create, they keep ranting. We know who's really doing the planting.
Oh, no, he didn't. He did not just say that. We know who's doing the planting. Just the rhymes are mind-blowing to me on this record. It's like you can't believe a story like this would lend itself to this kind of writing, but... I read one review of it that said there's nothing more American and there's no better American story than hip hop. Mm-hmm. And it just
so
works.
True.
Yeah, and it works so perfect. It's just a perfect marriage.
In a sense, it's the logical extension of the great Schoolhouse Rock, which we all grew up on.
Yeah, that's a good point. Our pal Gene Demby, who works on the Code Switch blog here at NPR, was live tweeting his discovery of this cast recording on mm-hmm. our site.
Yeah.
And his whole thing was like, do I love musicals? Like, have
right.
I loved musicals
right.
all along? And he and I and a couple other people are going up to New York to actually finally see Hamilton in a few months.
I've actually thought of moving back to New York just so I could see Hamilton.
I got my tickets like March 3rd, something like that. I'm already ready to see it. But my God, Lin-Manuel Miranda is
he has so many
genius.
Different. Yeah, he has so many different references to other musicals throughout this one, and also references to other hip hop songs. I mean, he weaves them together so perfectly and seamlessly. Hamilton.
I mean,
musical.
Honestly, it's been a great. It's been a great decade for musicals. I mean, we have Spring Awakening, we have American Idiot. There's been a ton of Ophelia, the amazing Ophelia musical. So in a way, this is just the culmination of a build toward this new phase in the life of the American musical, one of the great theatrical and musical forms of our popular music history. And yes, I was in musicals in high school, okay? I admit it.
Me too.
Stephen?
Nope. Yeah, no.
My school was too small. We didn't have a musical.
Yeah, I stayed far away.
Ours were just horrid. They were just awful.
I'm in awe of the density of the sorts of records we've all picked. And maybe that's indicative of what 2015 was. Just records that were well thought out. They weren't all simple ideas. So there were a number of great punky records that were just simple ideas that were
sure.
out there, and they were a whole lot of fun. But Joanna Newsom put out a record this year.
Yes.
And that record is one that will be unfolding mm-hmm. Into 2016 for me. It's incredibly
dense. It is dense. I haven't found a way into it yet.
But it's brilliant.
And
it's much more, if I think of all the records that we've talked about today, it's much more like the Björk record. In its complication and very intelligent and very, she's unlike, in the way Björk is, no one's like Joanna Newsom.
Absolutely. I know it seems like I'm a music critic and I listen to music, but really I just sit around waiting for another Joanna Newsom record in between Joanna Newsom records. So, so for me, it was a very good year. Obviously, Joanna Newsom is connected to art music. She plays the harp. She was trained in several different folk traditions, including African music. On this album, which is called Divers, although initially I thought it was called Diverse, because it is diverse in its own way. For the first time, she doesn't write in strictly autobiographical terms. It's an album about, you know, small issues like time, mortality. Can a love affair survive over the span of ages? Her writing is super dense. And in fact, she said in interviews that she feels like her fans would be let down if she didn't write incredibly dense lyrics for them to unravel. But also musically, she worked with several different producers on this record. And I think that's one thing about it. There are different ways into what she does on this record. And just at core, though, for me, it's, again, it's the voice, it's that point of view, and it is the seriousness of what she does. I guess reflecting on this through our conversation, maybe what I sought from music was a kind of seriousness. You know, this year, we spend so much time, or I spend so much time, flicking around on social media, going from analysis of very frightening world events and domestic events straight to funny cat pictures, you know? Mm-hmm. Everything is blurred. And for me, listening to an album like Divers, it gives me a space to contemplate, you know, the important things in life. And I'm really grateful to Joanna Newsom for giving that to me. And the song that I want to play goes right to the heart of that. It's called Time as a Symptom. It is the final song on her album Divers, and it leads in a circular fashion back to the beginning. The last lyric of this song connects to the first lyric of the album, so it will set you on one of those Stephen Thompson-like circular trails of listening over and over again. So here's Joanna Newsom with Time as a Symptom from Divers.
Time passed hard, and the task was the hardest thing she'd ever do. She forgot the moment she saw you. So it would seem to be true. One crew burrowed the bases, we forget. One crew dead the bases, we believe it erases all the rest that precedes. A stand brave life liver, bleeding out your day. I was love is not a symptom of time. Time is just a symptom of love.
You probably just take that one line. Love is not a symptom of time. Time is just a symptom of love. And think about just that one line for a long time. That's a tough one. It's really beautiful, that mourning dove cooing in the background.
It's like, and you said earlier, this is one of those records that you don't just have on in the background, where this is one you have to commit to.
Absolutely. And you know, it's bottomless. It's actually a serious challenge for the critic, and will probably, you know, defeat any critic who tries to completely interpret it, at least at one pass. For example, I thought I got not every reference, but most reference on this record, and didn't even know that time as a symptom included a line from James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake until I read somebody else's review, Carl Wilson's. So thanks a lot, Joanna Newsom, for making me feel dumb. As you were saying about the Wilco record, one reason we will be revisiting it, because these artists are putting in so much depth, and not that artists in the past didn't, like, you know, whatever. I've been listening to old Alice Cooper records from 1972, and you know what? They have depth. So it's not that the past is more simple than the present.
What it made me think of, it was an earlier analogy you had to movies before, which in my own mind, I dismissed in one way, because I think of movies and music so completely different, and I love hearing songs over and over again. I know I'm an exception, never watch a movie more than once.
Oh, wow.
And I don't read books more than once. But
it
made me think that because all music will seemingly be always accessible, which that wasn't true before. You had to have a friend with a record, or however it was to obtain a record. We don't have to understand, and as the term Stephen uses a lot that I like, unpack a record right away. It can be something you discover 2 years from now, or 12 years from now, when another generation picks it up, because some artist 12 years from now is inspired by something Joanna Newsom might have done in the middle of the tens, or whatever we call this decade.
Well, I think streaming's partly the issue. People who subscribe to the services, I love having access to everything, but having access to everything means you probably don't spend as much time with any one thing that you used to.
Yeah, the up and down. And the other part of it is you'll spend time with something you never would have been able to touch. Speaking of streaming,
I told myself I wasn't gonna cry.
It's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet, to go over everything. They say the time's supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming about who we used to be when we were younger and free. I've forgotten how it felt before the world fell at our feet. There's such a difference between us and a million miles.
The only song streaming from Adele's record, Hello, is the song Hello. How did folks feel about this record? It's the world Embrace.
Yeah,
embraces this record.
I feel like in some ways this was, and to talk about movies a little bit again, it's a little bit the year of the juggernaut in culture. It doesn't matter what I think of the Star Wars movie that's coming out in a few weeks, because absolutely everybody's going to see it. It didn't matter what I thought of Jurassic World, because like $600 million in tickets were sold just in the U.S. alone. And I feel like this Adele record was a little bit like that. It was just this boulder rolling down the hill. And like what I thought of it almost didn't matter. And for what it's worth, I really, really like the song Hello, but I found the record as a whole very monochromatic and glum. And not glum in the way that I love so much glum music. I found it, it's like several takes on her ballad, her huge hit ballad, Someone Like You, but nothing of like Rolling in the Deep, nothing with that fizz and crackle to it of some of her, of some of the songs that she became known for that have fire in their belly.
It did everything it could to not be an R&B record in some ways. And to me, almost in many ways, like a Streisand record or something.
In a way, it goes back even further, I think, to this may seem like a strange connection, but to the crooners of even the 1920s. I mean, it's a record that reaches very far back. I agree, though, Stephen. For me, it's a hard listen all the way through. But
25 million people don't think that at all. So,
or do they? They bought it.
Three million people did.
Okay, whatever.
25 is the title.
Yeah. I know. Obviously.
But I don't know. I mean, some people say that a record like this doing very well is really because the previous record did well, and people kind of, it's also the holiday season. So, I love Adele as a personality, though. Let me say, she's...
Oh, yeah.
She's delightful. Oh, yeah. She's substantial.
Yeah, and I say I'm disappointed in this record from the perspective of somebody who really loves. I love her first couple records.
Yeah, the overall response and reviews to this record were really very mixed across the board. I expected universal love, and if you go to a site like Metacritic and look at the average score is basically a C.
We weren't surprised when that was true of Celine Dion back in the day, or of lots of mainstream artists. I think we've entered a point where a certain kind of mainstream pop, also gains critical respect, and it's a challenge for the critic. And that's not a bad thing at all, but I think it's just a current phase in the way people are writing about music, and it could change again.
Taking it away from the critic, one thing that Saida Blount from NPR Music went to the Adele show, and one of the things that speaks to the popularity of it is the width and breadth and scope of the kinds of people who go and listen to Adele. All sorts of ages, all sorts of people of all different races and all different backgrounds. There's something to what she does that speaks to a broad cross-section, unlike almost all of the artists we've picked here today.
Saturday Night Live spoofed this on a recent, where it was the holidays, a large sprawling family of different ages and races were around a table arguing with each other, and then this song came on and everyone just suddenly stopped and, and had nothing but love for each other.
It's called adult contemporary music. It's been around for, at least since the 70s, this format on radio, and it's always appealed across ages and races.
Even young? You think?
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely. Okay. Definitely someone like, I mentioned her before, but someone like a Celine Dion or a Mariah Carey has had fans, across all spectrums.
A little debate broke out over email within the NPR staff about the quality of Adele's voice. Kind of this, is her voice really that great? And I think, when you're talking about how accessible she is, the exact purity of her voice isn't quite the issue. I think she sings with an enormous amount of, for lack of a better term, like emotional credibility.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And I think that that her, the sorrow in and the regret in a song like Hello goes directly to your emotions and makes her very, very easy to access. She brings out emotions very expertly.
I think that's very true. I think in many ways, her appeal is the opposite of technical proficiency. It's the way in which her voice has a kind of an ordinary streak in it. None of us can sing as well as Adele, but we all can kind of hear our own inner voice in her voice, and that's what works for people.
Let's go out on something let's go out on a surprise, Missy Elliott's return.
Missy Elliott's return. Yeah, well, talk about a cause for celebration. Yeah. We just had her on the show last week, so I don't know how much I need to say about this. The single that
no
she,
one listens
she
to
dropped,
show.
WTF,
hey.
Where they,
I didn't hear it.
Where are they from? But, you know, in some ways, this sort of this one song and artist speaks to a lot of the things we've talked about this year. She's returned after a long break. The lyricism in this song is such a dense song with so many ideas and references coming at you. It's nearly impossible to keep up, but also at the same time, very accessible and a song that you can really, you know, get into with the grooves. And she's just... I don't know. I'll just say that no one compares, and I'm ecstatic to have her back.
Yeah.
Missy Elliott is so influential in hip-hop, in R&B, in electronic music. She's such an amazing character, such an amazing songwriter, a great rapper. I love the fact that everything she does comes out of dance and movement and goes beyond mere language into kind of her own language. And this song, she works with Pharrell, another great master of this moment, and it has every quality you want in a Missy Elliott song. So I'm delighted to have her back. And the outfits in the video are fly.
Oh, yeah. She, you know, the vibe of this song, the vibe of her music in general, I think, is it's a very welcoming vibe. It's like everyone has a seat at the table. It's like she can be angry and playful at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Let's go out on WTF. And if you want to vote for your five favorites, go online.
NPR.org/allsongs.
Five favorite albums, and we'll put that together as our next show. Robin and I are going to work up some kind of a holiday special.
We'll get it figured out here eventually.
We'll do that. Wonderful to hear you, Ann Powers.
Great to be with you guys virtually.
Yes. Thanks, Ann.
Take care, Nashville. Stephen Thompson, thanks. To see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm always surprised. Every time it's a little harder to barge into the studio door, there are more obstacles placed in my path. But I managed to crawl in every time.
He's out there with his flip phone.
He stepped on a rake just as he walked through the...
He's with his flip phone saying, hello.
Robin Hilton, always great. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks you all. I'll talk to you soon.
Good. For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered.
You think you're drinking. Yeah. Head to the flow, don't collect that dough. You better huddle up, cause the beat's so cold. Huh? Pop that cock, get me low. Huh? This another hit, I got an ace in the hole. Boys on my back, player, did you pick that? You got a small stack, player, you can keep that. Huh? I'm a Big Mac, make you wanna eat that. Like, yak it to the yak. Yeah. Junk in the trunk, make it pumps in the bump. Girls wanna have fun, make it sticking out the tongue. Huh?
Different.
ripping rip, ripping shit, microphone gripping it, getting these Benjamins, new car whipping it. I'm so far ahead of y'all, man, I'm on top of the stars. I don't care none of y'all, blah, 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 blah. You best to go rewrite your balls. Shut up, what? How they doing? Where you from?
Hey,
how they doing? Where you from? That's how they do it where we from.
Hey.
That's how they do it where they from.
Shut it, what?
How they do it where you from?
Hey.
How they do it where you from? That's how they do it where we from.
What?